Worldwide concern is growing over the continuing decline of coral reefs, even as our understanding grows of their essential role in marine ecosystems. It's a bleak picture, but Dr. Ruth Gates, director of the University of Hawaii's Institute of Marine Biology, sees signs of hope. She looks at some especially resilient corals and says there are ways their resilience can become a resource for others. She's giving a talk on the subject as part of the Waikiki Aquarium's Distinguished Lecture Series, and she's on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Dr. Gates.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. It's good to hear something positive on this front, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and I think that, you know, it's a little bit overwhelming when you think of all of the reports of coral death. I think that, you know, what we're trying to do really is to think about the more hopeful signs, and that is that some corals and some reefs are doing much better than we might expect.
Even as they face the same conditions that those that aren't doing well face?
That's exactly right, Chris. I mean, I think that this is the wonderful thing about biology. There's a huge amount of variation in the way that individual species even respond. You know, you can see that in humans. Some humans are extremely good athletes,
sure,
and some aren't. Some are very, good at combating disease, and some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true for corals.
So you find the especially resilient corals and kind of figure out what they've got that the rest don't have, yeah?
That's exactly right. We're trying to understand the biology that underpins that greater ability to withstand conditions that kill other corals.
Well, what are the things that you would examine in a case like that?
So corals are really, like all organisms, they have sort of variety in their basic genetics. So how and who their parents were is important. So if their parents are particularly resilient individuals in the population, then the offspring will do well. But
mm-hmm.
Corals are really the consortium organism of the planet. They are dependent on tiny little plant cells that live inside their tissues. And it's these cells that actually give the corals their color, that characteristic brown color. And we know that if the coral partners with a particular type of plant cell, that it might be able to withstand stress better than an alternative partnership. So who you partner with is critically important if you're a coral.
Well, it makes sense in terms of things that we're learning a lot about humans, which is that we're not one organism. We're host to hundreds, right, of various
Absolutely.
Bacteria. And so lots of little Santa's helpers running around inside us. Similar in the case of an organism like coral, you're saying?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the corals are masters of using the biology of others. And you know, they associate with lots of bacteria. But they are amazing in that they've been able to develop these really close interactions with organisms that function like all plants do, to actually photosynthesize, fix inorganic carbon dioxide into a food supply. And the coral is actually fed by its plant from within. So essentially, corals have...
I think we might have just lost you, Dr. Gates. Dr. Gates, do we have you back on the line?
We do. I'm so sorry about that.
You scared me for a minute there.
That's
quite all right. Well, it just shows how vulnerable we still are, doesn't it?
We are. So I was just saying, you know, they're kicking out these plant cells because the plant cell is no longer able to function properly in these high temperatures. And so the animal suddenly sees them, and rather than being a benefit of being a food source, they now see them as a foreign body that they need to get rid of and kick them out. And so the coral pales as it loses those cells. It's fascinating. This
now, what's that in
the relationship?
What's that in response to when you say the coral pales and expels these? What is that...
Coral bleaching is actually, it's most often associated with higher than normal temperatures. And so, you know, as we move through and climate change intensifies, the reefs globally are actually closer to their temperature limits. And any intermittent spike now can cause a bleaching event. And we've seen that here in Hawaii 2 years in a row. We had a bleaching event in Hawaii in 2014
mm-hmm.
and another one in 2015. And both of those events were associated with higher than normal seawater temperatures.
That's a particularly difficult problem to address, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it's a global problem. I mean, obviously, the way to address it is to really stop fossil fuel burning. That's going to reduce the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, and it's going to start to halt the warming of the planet.
Fossil fuel
as
burning,
well as the acidification of the water.
Has that is it already too late? I mean, in terms of fossil fuel burning, which isn't likely to stop tomorrow, have we passed a kind of a critical point with that?
So I think my sense is that the jury is out as to whether we will stop it. I think that everybody is pushing to stop it. But I think we've now moved to this point where we have to think about adapting to this new normal, if you will. And that's what a lot of our work is really under the umbrella of climate change adaptation, proactive strategies to try and offset the impacts, to address and accommodate the fact that our planet has changed, and attempt to develop corals and coral stocks that are actually provisioned to face the conditions of the future.
So coral that can deal with heightened ocean temperatures.
Exactly.
And sort of finding out which those are and what conditions allow them to thrive, yeah?
Yes, and how we breed them and how we grow them and how we could use them if we were to move to thinking about restoring reefs that are already damaged or building resilience on reefs that are somewhat damaged. So it is really a sort of taking 25 years of basic science that we've now got a really good idea of what's underpinning the differences in the sensitivity of corals to temperature, and now harnessing that into an action-oriented solution.
And you say breeding them. Now you're talking about the kind of strategy that's employed with other endangered species, where you take them out of the wild and allow them to flourish in ideal conditions, but in essentially lab conditions.
Yes, I mean, our goal would be to try to breed them and get the biology back onto the reef. I mean, really, at the end of the day, when we think about what reefs do, they're critical to creating habitat for fish and other organisms that we eat, so the food supply. They are critical in protecting the land behind them, and they serve as a platform for tourism. And so what the goal would be to understand and develop these corals and then think about how we might move them back into the reef and perpetuate our reefs. I mean, that really is what we need to do. We need to continue to have coral reefs. In my opinion, the end point of having essentially large aquaria that showcase the last of the corals on the planet is not what we're about.
No, we want them in the ocean where they belong.
Exactly, and it's better to intervene early than it is to wait until they are threatened and endangered species.
I don't think you'll find too much disagreement there. Dr. Gates, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was wonderful to be here.
My pleasure. Dr. Ruth Gates is the director of and a researcher at the University of Hawaii's Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. She'll be speaking on the wonderful world of corals, harnessing basic science to address an ecological crisis. That's Thursday, April 7th at 6:30 at the Thurston Memorial Chapel in Honolulu. It's part of the Waikiki Aquarium's Distinguished Lecture Series.
Nós vamos para longe do mar azul. E não importa se vamos pro norte ou se vamos pro sul. A nossa viagem esférico. Próxima parada é a bela ilha de Malibu.
The fields of Flanders, a battlefield in a new war.
Europe are suffering the same pain that this region has known every single day.
Belgium's challenge in maintaining security in concentrated neighborhoods means ISIS could apparently operate freely throughout Europe. Has the sleeper cell awakened? Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and Public Radio International.
This morning at 9, right after the conversation.
It could be said that what we have here is a failure to communicate. It could also be said that Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell's relationship with the city council couldn't get any worse, or could it? Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair asked that question in today's Reality Check. Good morning. We've heard from council members that they feel that in many cases the mayor just completely circumvents them, that they get cut out of the information loop. They have to find out about policy and you know, other programs that might be in the media but not necessarily told to them directly. Could this relationship deteriorate any more?
Well, that's the basic point of Anita Hofschneider's article. Now, disagreements between a council and a mayor are nothing new. That is part of the process. But it seems like it's particularly deteriorated to a lower level than we've seen before. Let me give you an example. Just last week, at a public hearing, several council members actually called the mayor insincere and disrespectful. Why? Well, that's because the mayor had a press conference the day before the council was going to veto that recycling subsidy bill. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
He did not tell the council about this. He proposed a compromise. And, of course, the very next day, the council went ahead and overrode the veto. The point here is that the council members say, look, you should reach out and tell us that you're going to do this. Send an amendment to the council so that we can you know, consider that. Instead of the traditional courtesy that is normally expected between the two branches, there's a feeling that there's a level of disrespect there. We've heard that from several council members.
Is there a way back when you talk to the council members who've said that he's disrespectful, that they're really waiting for the mayor to change his behavior to begin to at least to extend some olive branches?
Well, remember, this is an election year, and several people suggested that they wonder whether this has more to do with Ernie Martin versus Kirk Caldwell. Now, Ernie, the council chair, Ernie Martin, has not officially declared that he's running, but one wonders whether that might be fueling some of the tension, because among the issues that have been most difficult to reach compromise on are dealing with homelessness and affordable housing. And, of course, those are very big issues right now. Trevor Ozawa, a council member, he went so far as to suggest that maybe we need to have a liaison position, someone who can work between the council and the mayor, even though the mayor has several people on his communication staff. I should add, by the way, the mayor's office turned down a request to interview the mayor for his side of the story.
We talked to him last week, and he said, well, you know, pretty much what we talked about a little earlier, that, well, you know, there's inherent problems between councils and mayors, et cetera, but seemed to paper over a lot of the issues that we've just been talking about. But to go so far as to say we need, you know, one more layer of someone who can run interference?
It's very unlikely that that's going to happen. But let me give you another example. Martin, the council chair, held a press conference of his own in which he had a box of Kleenex on his desk. And it pretty much suggested that here's my reaction to any complaints from the mayor, you know, crocodile tears, if you will. So clearly this has gone to a new level where it's playing out on the airwaves. I wouldn't say that the mayor can paper this over. These are serious issues. And again, though, let's clarify. It is an election year, and all sorts of things are at stake. And homelessness and affordable housing are very much going to be on the minds of voters.
You bet. They're not going away. But we have to for the moment, so I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bethann.
Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat.
At 8:30, you're tuned to The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. If you want to be in touch, you can reach us on our talkback line, 808-792-8217. On Twitter, we're at HI Conversation or at BKOZHPR. And you can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Coming up, a grandfather-grandson musical collaboration. But first, the news from the BBC.